Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's Jacqueline.
And Alana.
And here's another episode of Black and Yellow. Welcome, Black. That was an accident. I said on another episode, and I think I'm just going to keep it.
I think you should.
I need to find the yellow counterpart, though. Maybe you can come up with that one.
Yeah, maybe that could be like our little tag at the end.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We'll think about
under
it.
Construction. Thank you for that burst of laughter, because I feel like another week in another kind of sort of quarantine.
Yep. And another pair of sweatpants for me. And braless as usual. Another pair of no bra.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's middle of July. Like what?
Yeah, it kind of feels like the dog days of Corona, or quarantine, I guess I should technically say, where like the initial like, ooh, okay, we're locked in doing projects that we've been putting off for a lifetime, watching shows and movies we've always wanted to watch. And now it's sort of like, okay, like that was cute. Let's be real. If you didn't do those projects that you wanted to do for a lifetime, you're not going to get to them. Right. You're not really all that interested in them.
You're absolutely right.
And it also kind of feels like people are doing quarantine on their own terms.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it feels like some stuff is open, some stuff is closed.
Yeah. Like some restaurants are just like, we're not going to listen to the governor.
Right.
Or I was walking around the other day and I looked and it said, there was this huge sign and it was like, open for dine-in. And I was like, what? And then I turn around to another place and then they'd be like, absolutely no dine-in. And I was confused.
Yes. I was picking up a tray of pad thai for my godmother's birthday yesterday. And there was a corner cafe and it was like cracking busy. It felt like social distancing was like a strong suggestion,
right,
but not enforced. Some masks on, some masks off. And like,
bizarre.
Is it just me, or does it feel like this is going to be happening for the rest of the year and probably into 2021?
Probably. Like, I know the LAUSD school starts in August. I only know this mm-hmm. because my aunt's a teacher and my sister's in third grade going to fourth. But yeah, school's going to start, but it's going to be all online. And it's just like, usually when school starts, there is this feeling of like, the new season, the new year,
yeah,
you know, in terms of businesses, not so much for us anymore because obviously we're not in school anymore, but there is that like renewed life, renewed energy. And the fact that it's going to be from home, it's kind of like, well, nothing's changed. So
yeah. Target's running back to school shopping ads. it feels very tone deaf because I'm like, who's going back to school shopping
in
this climate?
To wear at home.
Who needs 50-cent colored pencils? Those colored pencils are shitty anyways. Step it up to the Crayola. But I think for us, because we often get bitten by the wanderlust bug, we can't travel.
Yeah, like, I was thinking
Mexico
about that.
Mexico doesn't want us. Canada doesn't want us. I think Mexico is giving us a taste of our own medicine, which I don't knock on them
I'm
for
not
that.
Surprised.
Mm-mm.
Yeah,
Europe doesn't want us. Like nobody wants us.
And then when you're even the thought of like traveling, I think about Asia all the time. And then I'm like,
yes.
Even if I do go to Taiwan, I have to be quarantined for 14 days alone. The four of us, my family, so we all have to be quarantined separately in different hotels.
Oh.
Like you can't quarantine together. I mean, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, you can't. You have to be alone in a hotel room for 14 days. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I'm pretty sure it would make sense that you would quarantine alone. And if that's the case, if that's not the case, then the four of us for 14 days in one room, like,
oof.
How then, you know, it's just like, I don't, it's just so bizarre. And then tickets are so cheap, but I mean, it's, yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, family quarantine together in the same hotel room for 14 days. Either you guys get intensely closer than you already are.
Or we do some ayahuasca and, you know.
Or like one of you walks out a fugitive and like there are corpses behind. Like who knows?
Right.
Everyone wear a mask. Let's just like drive Corona into the ground so we can travel again, or if you're me, like go to the theater or go vintage shopping, which I know,
the movie theater, just the thought of not being able to go see the movies in the movie theater is such a, like, I feel like the time is coming just because everything has also been released on, you know, Disney Plus, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But the thought of that is like, I grew up watching in the movies. Like that's like where I feel the most sense of, not the most, but
I get
the sense of like, you know, the screen is so big, you're alone, it's dark. It's just like the sense of like feeling like a kid again, and to not have that or to have to create that in your own home, it's just, it's different, you know?
Yeah, I really miss live theater, and I kind of worry about our Broadway community because I've got a couple of friends that were working on Broadway that are now essentially delivering for Postmates or Seamless or Uber Eats because, you know, like everyone's just trying to get by, and Broadway is trying to figure out their shit too. I mean, you can't play to packed houses, but also theaters like that can't break even or turn a significant profit if they're operating at 60% capacity.
Right. So. Yeah. I watched Hamilton on Disney Plus the other day. And then I was thinking, you know, okay, sure. They could space out seating 6 feet apart, but then you, like you said, you're only using 60% of what's available. There's no way, you know, the whole point is to pack those houses.
Absolutely.
So it's crazy, you know, like ballets, everything that is theaters, you know, in and of itself, movie tickets, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's very, very strange and weird. But I guess we'll see, right? We'll be here with you guys.
Yeah, we'll be tickling them earbuds every week. You can count on us.
At least
you
podcasts won't have to.
Yeah.
Nothing will happen to us.
We will not become obsolete through quarantine. Okay, so with that being said, before we put our money where our mouth is, we just need to take a moment and give our condolences to the family and friends of the actress Naya Rivera, who we lost over the weekend. May she rest in power. Thoughts, prayers with her son, with her baby's father, with her family. It's a terrible loss.
Yeah, tragic in a way too.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, quick fill in, she drowned in Lake Piru while swimming with her son.
Her son.
Yes. Crazy. Yeah, there's that. For those of you who are familiar with the layout of SoCal, Lake Piru is in Ventura County, but you wouldn't know it because it's like half an hour away from Santa Clarita. So it's kind of close to Six Flags if you need that sort of major landmark. She's best known for playing Santana Lopez on Glee. Did you ever watch Glee?
I did. Not enough. I think I've watched, a handful of episodes here and there. I think Glee was airing. There was some time in my life where I just couldn't have access to television all the time, whether I was in college or...
I think it was college because like it was 2009 or 2015. Yeah.
Okay. So I was in... it was the years that I was in college and I had no TV and let alone being bombarded with classes 24/7 and going to an art school, which means I was always in rehearsal and always memorizing or sleeping or eating. But I remember being like, I'm going to watch it when I'm done. And people were talking about it all the time. But she was great on that show.
I didn't watch it regularly. I guess I watched whatever the television equivalent of like radio hits is.
Okay.
Like I watched the Gwyneth Paltrow episode. I watched the Madonna episode. The episode where they all like got drunk and like vomited on the stage and then got a reward of some sort. Like I watched the more popular episodes. Because I was in college, I had a bunch of friends who were on their journey to self-love and to self-acceptance and ultimately to coming out. And I know that because she played a teenage lesbian on that show, that sort of visibility was really important for these friends of mine at that time.
And being a person of color too, which is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know that a specific friend of mine watched her coming out scene on that show and it like sort of set the script for him. I always thought that was so powerful. And like, I'm sure that character made others feel less alone.
And artists in general. I mean, it was the first show that was about theater and musicals. And growing up, you know, if you were in musical theater, you were like the weird kid. If you did theater, you were like nerdy and strange. You had to be a cheerleader or a jock or like those typical, you know, feelings that I felt as a young girl being like, well, I don't want to do more math. I want to be on stage, and having it being Asian, coming from, you know, a mindset of like doctor, engineer, lawyer, you know, it was really important to just have musical theater and sing-songy stuff be mainstream and be popular and be liked. And that was huge. I think that was the first of its kind, if I'm not, in terms of like a show on a network. So. Yeah. So that in of itself, I think, you know, what made it so successful as well.
I think what's also hard about her passing is that she's not far off in age from us.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we're performers, like, we're actresses, and growing up, she was always on TV. Like, she was on TV way before Glee. I remember her when she was on The Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. She will always be Gwendolyn from Family Matters, who showed up on, you know, her first scene, Leopard Pico, talking about, I'm gonna like it here, and little Richie falling in love with her, like, she will always be Gwendolyn to me, but she was also on Even Stevens for a hot minute. And obviously the black sitcom classic, The Bernie Mac Show. So she had that sort of career that I feel like actresses like us sort of idolized and wanted, because homegirls seem to stay booked and busy.
Yeah.
And working on really great material. It's a really sad loss.
Amidst everything that's going on, I think it is very tragic. It just feels like a layer of sadness over a layer of another sadness, sprinkle some, you know, xenophobia in there, some more deaths. It's just like, you know,
racism.
Police brutality. It's just like another layer. It's like 2020 is like a cake you do not want to eat. And it's still baking. So we got to be careful. You know, I think everyone should hang in there, especially when it comes to mental health. And these things are going to happen, and we just have to brace ourselves and hopefully be surrounded. Not surrounded, because obviously we can't be surrounded all the time right now, but have the people we can go to, you know, to have that outlet, or listen to us, because we're all you guys.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think you said it perfectly. So I'm just going to round this out by saying, gone too soon, Naya. Yeah. I hope you're resting in peace and power. And it's crazy that you're not on this earth, but you will be missed.
Yep, definitely. And I do hope that her son, you know, can have family to go to, because that age is just so, so young. So yeah, I do send my love and light to the family.
For sure. Okay. And with that being said, let's put our money where our mouth is, shall we?
Let's put our money where our mouth is.
Would you like to go first, or would you like for me to go first? Full disclosure, guys, we generally talk about this off mic, but we didn't decide this, so now we're talking about it on mic.
I think I mentioned this. I mentioned this in another episode too, but we always seem to kind of be either like in the same category, or, you know, one episode Alana will talk about coffee and I'll talk about tea. Another episode Alana will say like nails and I'll talk about fashion. So it's just like, let's see if this one is along the lines. Maybe not. Who cares? It's just fun. So I'll go first. Mine is, I wanted something that I was thinking about all the segments that I've done with Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is, you know, and like, what are the essentials, and the what is it called? Consumables that I think I was thinking, like, people with coronavirus. What can I talk about that people who are during this time, during coronavirus, can go and do and buy or shop or whatever? So that being said, this is where I drew my inspiration from. I looked up and found this amazing it's obviously the website, but it's an all Asian Organics. It's called Asian Organics. And it's all about being organic, eco-friendly, no toxic fertilizers, no artificial preservatives, all natural, no GMO, no flavors, no additives, all that stuff. Super healthy. So the best that Asia has to offer. And it's
which is a lot of things.
It was founded by Jonathan D along with two of his friends, Roj and Rajat. So Jonathan D has had a lot of, and they're all Asian. I believe two of them might be Indian, but he was a retired seafood businessman. He was the founder of a publicly listed company. He has spent over a quarter of a century in seafood manufacturing and export marketing, but he kind of started realizing later on in his life that, hey, what I eat makes a difference. So they're in Hong Kong, Indonesia, Philippines, United Kingdom, the USA, and much more. So where you can find their stores in California, it feels like a gem, because I was like, man, like, why isn't there one here? So I'm in the closest maybe to Los Angeles County, I would say, would be at the City of Hope Comprehensive Cancer Center. So it's interesting. I think I might actually go visit the store because it's on a hospital campus.
Nice.
Yeah, and then they also have one in called kind of alongside of like NorCal, like kind of like, you know, on the way up. There's like all these little stores.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's international. The website is AsianOrganicsFood.com. And they have, you know, noodles, sauces, spices, condiments, mostly things that are like going to be the base for a lot of your foods. But what I love about them is that they are completely organic, certified by JAS, which is the Japanese certification of organic, and certified also by the European Union certification for organic. So, you know, kind of. Mm. All through and through, that they are transparent, they are sustainable, they are ethical, and yeah, go support them if you're in the mood for some healthy, healthy, healthy Asian food.
Oh, Jackie, what? You are quite the yin to my yang.
Oh,
because no, that's a good thing.
I mean, oh yes.
Because after you cook all of this wonderful, organic, delicious food, you gotta clean up, right?
Yes.
So the company that I am spotlighting in this episode is called Pure Home. It is developed by a Black woman named Angela Richardson, and she makes earth-friendly, human-friendly cleaning products. Oh, and I have to tell you, full disclosure, I picked this for two reasons. A, I saw the bottle, because a friend of mine has a bottle of the laundry detergent. And the bottle is very naturally still looking. And I was like, oh God, Jackie would fuck with this product and fuck with this bottle and fuck with the fact.
Earth friendly?
Yeah, earth friendly and human friendly. So it's totally eco-friendly. It's non-toxic. It's natural. The CEO she's the CEO, formulator, and product developer. And her mission is to make us change the way that we look and think about clean. Mm. And so Pure Home, all non-toxic, all of her products rate on a 1-2 scale on the EWG website, the Environmental Working Group website, for those of you who like to check out that website before purchasing new natural products. The laundry detergent, which my friend raves about and loves because she's got a son with sensitive skin, comes in a compostable, recyclable container made of newspaper and cardboard.
Wow, great.
And then she's got a whole line of household cleaning products, the good old-fashioned, you know, cleaning concentrate that comes in a massive bottle, and then you dilute it and you can clean surfaces and toilets and mirrors and all that stuff, because who's not over cleaning and cleaning all of the surfaces and things nowadays. They use organic raw ingredients and are totally plant-based, biodegradable, ooh, and low toxic. They're also Leaping Bunny certified, for those of you that also pay attention to that as well. And for those of you who don't know what Leaping Bunny certified means, because I did not, it means that they don't test on animals or source ingredients from companies that do.
Important.
Yeah. So eat clean, stay clean. Yeah. Buy black and yellow.
Yeah.
Okay. Shall we get into today's show?
Let's.
All right. So, y'all, we know there is a social justice movement in full swing. There's a whole bunch of racial reckoning occurring all over the country and the world at this moment. Mm-hmm. And a positive byproduct of the current times that we're in is that there are a lot of changes happening. Mm-hmm. Some are big, some are small, some are cosmetic, some are whack. But hey, like, change is change. That being said, Breonna Taylor's murderous cops are still free. So we will keep fighting until we can rectify that situation. A drawback of all this political and social change, however, is that if you are a white woman who is named Karen or Becky, this is not a good time for you. You are not living your best life. No. 2020 is making that damn near impossible.
Or if you're, I have it written down because there's so many.
Go for
if you're
it.
A Chad, if you're mm-hmm. a Stacy, if you're Oof. A Susan, if you're a Zach, if you're a Kyle, I'm sorry.
Oh my God. It's just, y'all, it's rough out there. Them streets is mean. They are talking about you. They are laughing about you. They are turning you into memes and butts of jokes.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the difference between Becky's and Karen's today.
Yeah. So it'll be fun, funny, not maybe not so fun and funny if you're a Karen or a Becky, or maybe fun and funny if you are a Karen or Becky.
If you are looking for a little respite from all this corona conversation, that will probably never end.
Right.
I also think it's probably fair to say up front that not all white women who are named Karen or Becky are Karens and
right.
Beckys.
Right, for sure.
There's whack Karens and Beckys who we're going to be talking about. And then there's awesome Karens and Beckys who unfortunately just are white and have the name Karen and Becky. And
your,
like,
and your name, yeah, your name may also not be Karen and Becky, and you may still be a Karen and Becky.
You might be an Amber or an Ashley. Absolutely. Right. For sure. So just so we know, we're going to talk about good old basic Becky first, mm-hmm. and then we're going to move on to crazy ass Karen second. So I kind of want to start this off. I found a really great article online on a website called Awesomely Lovey. She wrote a great article about the differences between Becky's, Karen's, and Sharon's. Or, sorry, Becky's, Karen's, and Susan's.
Oh, yes. I love Sharon. Sharon could be right up there.
Sharon's right up there, absolutely. But I love what she had to say at the top of her article about all of these kinds of women. So I'm just going to quickly read it to you. I think it's hilarious. So she says, quote, "You can find them asking to speak to men. Managers, calling the cops on black people who go to parks or take naps on college couches. Sometimes they have swoop bangs with striped coloring. They can often be found in HR departments, spreading company-wide unfairness and other problematic behaviors. They might be the ones throwing you under the bus at work with a smile on their face. Microaggressions are their gift. They are the 53% of women who voted for a man who says he wants to grab them by the pussy. They are a legion. Hear them passive aggressively roar." Mm-hmm. So with that said, Becky actually has a formal definition.
Amazing, right?
Right. I
on Merriam-Webster
fell out of my desk chair when I came across this. So good old Merriam-Webster defines Becky as, quote, "a white woman who is ignorant of both her privilege and her prejudice," which, let's be real, that's like too soft for me. That's like too soft and too general. No.
Yeah. I think it's a very like nice definition.
Yeah, I feel like a Sharon wrote that definition of a Becky. Like, girl, we see that. We see through you. Because over at The Root, Michael Harriet gave a great definition of what a Becky is in his article, The 5 Types of Becky. It is a great article. And in it, he says that, quote, "a Becky is a white woman who uses her privilege as a weapon, a ladder, or an excuse." I fuck with this definition. Mm-hmm. It's really specific. And in true dictionary definition form, he provided the example of it used in a sentence. That sentence is, quote, "a random Becky hit me up on Twitter to explain why all white women are not racist." Because that's such a Becky, Karen, Sharon, and Susan thing to do.
Right.
I think it's important that we also just know straight up that part of the privilege of Beckydom, as Michael states, is that it rests in its members' unflagging belief that everything belongs to them.
Yes.
Thing to note. So a couple pop culture references for Becky. The most obvious, Beyonce's incredibly famous line, "Better call Becky with the good hair." We know that one.
There's also Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Becky, look at her butt. She looks like one of those rap stars' girlfriends. Yes. Like, absolutely. Yes. And then for any of you literary ladies and gentlemen out there, the 1948 novel Vanity Fair, the fictional heroine in that book, her name was Becky Sharp. So I remember Becky coming into sharp focus and essentially being coined after the world met Barbecue Becky, who was, you laugh, but like Barbecue Becky, woo, she was a wreck. She was the woman who in Oakland in 2018 called the cops on two black men who were barbecuing in a park. And because they were using charcoal to barbecue, she called the cops stating that barbecuing with charcoal is illegal and tossed in a little, I'm really scared, come quick in that conversation as well, because that's what Becky's do.
Right. And I also wanted, I forgot, I don't think we said this in the beginning, but this also, like, I feel like there was a resurgence of all this after Amy Cooper called the cops.
Oh, yes. That Karen.
Yeah. And I think it almost gave, fueled this, this even more.
We will get to Amy. Because Amy Cooper is still, like, the wildest story. Amy Cooper's fucking wild. But we'll... Yeah. We'll get to her.
Right.
So in this particular instance, just so that we are clear, she simply did not want those black men there. So she weaponized her white skin by calling the cops and faking fear and fear for her safety. Because in this world, if it's coming down to a decision between the safety of white women and black men, we know who wins that.
Right.
And she was doing that to send a message to the black men of essentially, you need to leave. Because I don't want you here, so leave and let me win, or you can wait for the cops to show up. And we all know how that can go.
Right, absolutely.
So the black men left, and they essentially turned Barbecue Becky into a meme, who is the Becky that we know today.
Good old Becky.
So here's a couple things about Becky. Beckys generally are in their teens and 20s. Some are aware of their white privilege, some are not. Some are keenly aware of their privilege, but can't actually own it. They're the kinds that want to believe that they just worked really hard and are really good people, and that's why they're getting all the breaks in life. But they can't, they don't want to own that it's their white skin that's also a part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some can be walking, talking contradictions, right? Love all animals, fuck black people. I change the channel when Eric Garner or Trayvon Martin or George Floyd are on TV. Kind of a contradiction.
Right.
Some like kind of feign blissful ignorance. The thing about a Becky is that she really relies on youth, whether she knows it or not, if that makes any sense. Because by the time Becky's reached their 30s, they are full-blown Karens. just seriously, Becky's are the kind of women that will say things like, Black Lives Matter, but will only fight the fight when it's convenient. Or they'll say they really value Black lives and Black opinions, and they think that a diversity of opinions in the workplace is good, until they get passed over for that promotion that then goes to a person of color. Then they got problems with Black people or people that are not like them, because they feel like they should have been in the winning position. And as long as Becky's are getting their due, they don't care about what other people are getting.
Yeah.
But if they don't get what they think is what they think they deserve, it's a problem.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
So socioeconomically, let's talk about Becky for a second here, because generally Beckys tend to be low to middle class and are likely to hold entry level positions or secondary level positions at jobs that generally pay a salary and have health insurance. Some Beckys went to college, some didn't. Some even got their GED because they were bad girls. Mm-hmm. But their whiteness gave them that stellar privilege of a second chance or a grand life do-over that, as people of color, we know that shit is not available to us. We fuck up once and that's over for us. Or, hey, if the world just decides to view us as bad people, then that's that.
That's that.
Beckys, they date Brads, Chads, and Chads. They smoke cigarettes, but also own a vape because they're trying to transition.
Yes.
Some smoke weed, some eat healthy. Beckys love the phrase, I don't see color, but not all white women. Can I touch your hair? I dated a black guy once.
Oh,
is this racist? I really miss the Obamas in the White House, or back in the day when this was applicable. I voted for Obama twice. Yeah. All of these statements, by the way, are rooted in a certain level of privilege that only a Becky or a Karen or a Sharon or a Susan can really put on full display. Mm-hmm. But did I mention that Becky voted for Barack Obama twice?
Right. And if she could, she would vote for him a third time.
Of course she would.
And she totally knows about Toni Morrison.
Oh, yes. That blue Toni eye. Morrison. She can relate. You know, she's taken an intro to feminism class
so
a
she's
time
an
or
ally,
two.
Right?
Of course. She's also down with the gays. Unless the gays are, like, giving her problems, then she's not down with the gays.
Then she might talk. She might ask to speak to the manager.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm actually glad that you hit up on the allies. Because, yes, like, Becky's consider themselves allies when the
they
fight
do.
Is convenient.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When it's convenient, when they aren't put on the spot, when they don't have to really do the work, when they can be liked, when they're not in trouble, when the spotlight's not on them, they are the people to go to. But if something is wrong, they will throw you under the bus, like you said. They will gaslight you.
Yep.
They will try to speak to anyone above you to try to get their way. And
absolutely,
you know, very covertly.
Uh-huh.
And
some
overtly.
Yes. some Beckys, they might correct you and tell you that their name is Rebecca because they want you to respect them. And Becky is too juvenile sounding. They've been trying to get away from that nickname since high school. And so when they went off to college, because assuming this Becky went off to college, she went far away from her parents off to college, and she went buck wild when she got there.
Absolutely.
And the Becky who says that she once dated a black guy, because I know a couple of these Beckys.
You do? I don't know any.
Woo, I know a couple of these Beckys. Let's be real. Dated is a loose term. Fucking is more of the appropriate
term.
Oh,
boy. So because, they consider themselves, you know, more black because of that.
You know, they've had a black boner or two in them, so they feel like they can't be racist. Of course not. But they also never viewed their black male romantic partners as whole and full people.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if they have the ability to see whole and full people at all times.
Yeah.
Because they live their lives centered around themselves. And
correct.
Their hair and their nails and their kids and soccer and so on.
Yeah. I mean, this Becky in particular wanted to test out that phrase, once you go black, you never go back.
Oh, boy.
But you're a Becky. Beckys always go back because that's the true Beckiness of a Becky.
Oh.
Like, Beckys go back because Beckys just don't think there's a real future with black men, but they would never actually say that to their face. However, when they go home, they talk all about their dealings with black men to their friends, Amber and Ashley.
Right. You can't speak about Becky's without speaking about Amber's and Ashley's.
No, you can't. Also, important, Becky's do not surround themselves with people that challenge their thoughts and their opinions. They challenge themselves, or they surround themselves with, some Beckys surround themselves with no one that looks like them.
Yes.
Some Beckys surround themselves with people of different skin complexions that are not like hers, but still think in the same way that she does. It's that sort of privilege and oppression kind of working in tandem. If you're the friend of a Becky, if you're like the black friend of a Becky, you kind of, you know, if you're trying to like move into the upper echelons of
society,
you might have a couple Beckys as friends. Lord knows I had a bunch of Beckys as friends growing up in high school, and then as you sort of learn and experience the world, you go, oh, okay, girl, no, I'm not about you. You're a wolf in sheep's clothing, and I have to dead that now.
Yes spot on.
I think the biggest difference between a Becky and a Karen is that Beckys are generally given the pass of being unaware because they're young. They haven't experienced enough, quote unquote, life, or don't have enough life perspective.
Right.
And that's the thing that allows them to skate by, if right. you will.
So let's segue into Karen, now that we're talking okay. about the difference. What okay, is okay. a Karen?
Okay, she's got an official title. She's got an official definition, too. Dictionary.com Crazy. Defines Karen as a pejorative slang term for an obnoxious, angry, entitled, and often racist middle-aged woman, who that is a mouthful,
I know.
Who uses her privilege to get her way or police other people's behavior. Jeez.
Amazing. The Root had a good definition as well. They said uh-huh. that a Karen is basically a graduated Becky who's mm-hmm. extremely aware of her privilege and weaponizes it. A Becky convinces herself and attempts to convince others that her whiteness doesn't matter. A Karen yep. doesn't even bother to fake it. She nope. knows it's her big joker and plays it whenever necessary, at the park, during a barbecue, in the restaurant, anywhere. She will mm-hmm. she will utilize her whiteness to get her way, as we've seen Absolutely. With Amy Cooper.
Yes. Also, I think another difference between Karen and Becky is Karen has a go-to haircut, shall we say. Because in featured memes, Karen is generally stereotyped as having that sort of Kate Gosselin, if anyone remembers John and Kate plus yeah. eight, that sort of zebra
bangs, side like multicolored mullet. Bangs.
Yeah.
The so, back.
Such a ugh, yeah, foul such a, haircut.
Yeah, with maybe acrylics and, you know, acrylic nails.
Yeah.
And just like spiky in the back, short in the back, mm-hmm. long in the front.
Jenny McCarthy, back in the day when she was all on that anti-vaxxing high horse, she had a Karen
yes.
side lob, because it's yeah. not quite a bob.
Right.
But yeah, she's generally stereotyped as having that the blonde whack haircut, asking to speak to retail and restaurant managers to voice complaints or make demands about being an anti-vaxxer Gen X soccer mom. Obviously right now in 2020, Karen spread as a label used to call out white women who are captured in viral videos, engaging in just different displays of caucasity and general just white nonsense. Mm-hmm. So before the Karen meme, there was the speak to the manager haircut. That's what actually, like, I think set the tone for what Karen looks like. So the speak to the manager haircut became its own meme before Karen took hold online. And the first pop culture reference to Karen came from Reddit in 2014. And on it, there was a gentleman posting under the subreddit, Fuck You Karen, who essentially was posting, quote, amusingly bitter stories about his ex-wife. The posts were so amusing, they inspired a high school student to make the entire subreddit, quote, Fuck You Karen.
So it went from 4,000 to 435,000. Thousand Reddit posts.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yes, exactly. So KarmaCop97 is the 17-year-old from Irvine, California, because like, what up, Callie, who made the subreddit 2 years ago as a joke and named it after the now-deleted user account. So Fuck You Karen was the husband posting angry stories about his wife. And then the 17-year-old created Fuck You Karen after the original poster or the original member of Reddit deleted his account. So at first, KarmaCop97 told Reddit that, quote, just to compile the lore behind this guy's relationship was why he did it, which he likely wanted to sort of view as parody. And so the villainous Karen had taken the memes and then the house, both typical parts of a typical, so, quote, Karen meme. So that subreddit grew and the name caught on of Karen. So let's just talk a little bit about who Karen is, right? We know she's white. We know she has a terrible haircut.
Most likely divorced, took everything, anti-vaxxer,
yes.
soccer mom. I love this little bit that I read on The Root was that the quality that all Karens share, every single one of them that they share is time.
Because
they
yes.
always seem to have time to call, to wait, to complain, to speak to someone, to get their way. They have time to get their way.
Yeah, exactly. Karen is generally in her 40s, and she's pretty well off, which is why she has time.
Yeah, upper middle class for sure.
Easily. Definitely. She could also have been a mom late in life. Karen's may or may not have just given birth to a baby girl named Rebecca. And she parades Rebecca all over town, and her eyes are just so full of pride about this new beautiful bundle of joy. But us people of color are looking at that baby Rebecca, and we are rolling our eyes. Because we know what baby Rebeccas are.
Mm-hmm.
They are Beckys, shitting in their diapers, laying in wait, and spitting up on racist family members.
Oh, boy.
I bet her grandmother's name is Susan. I would put money on the fact that Karen's mother's name is Susan and Becky's grandmother is Susan. Karens are extremely aware of their privilege and weaponizes their privilege in any way that they see fit. I think that's really important. Karens also generally tend to be Republicans.
Yes.
Putting that out there. Going back to awareness, again, she's incredibly aware. She loves her entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
And she has no issue lording it over people. Because
yeah, she has no problem making a big fuss. And
yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, no,
and
no
she
problem.
Lords it over people that she feels she is better than. I also think it's important to know that some Karens are down with gay people. Some Karens are not. The Karens that tend to be down with gay people are the Karens that, again, don't see gay people as whole people, but instead see gay people as funny sidekicks and quirky characters. These Karens utilize gay men and women as stylists, as makeup artists, as personal shoppers, as basically utilizing gayness as a style tool or weapon, but not necessarily mm-hmm. seeing them as whole and complete people.
Mm-hmm.
Karens are usually married to white men with typical one-syllable white man names, aka basic white man names. Ted, John, Chris, Bill, Bob, Seth, Chip, Reed, Todd, with two T's, never one, because, like, that's too Becky for Karen. She's got to be able to speak those names without difficulty when she's deep into her fifth glass of Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be real, also, Karens don't do dark-colored things, so they don't drink red wine because it's way too strong for her anyway.
Right, right.
And okay, I know what some of you are thinking out there. Not all Karens are married to white men with single syllable names, because that would not be waspy of Karen. And let's be real, there's a lot of waspy Karens, and they're never going to leave their waspy heritage behind. WASP, for those of you who have never actually heard that term before, stands for White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, aka Dem Original White Folks. Karens tend to be married to Hunters and Camerons and Thomases and Barons and Porters and Peters and Grahams and Shepherds, but he goes by Shep, and Whitneys and Tuckers and Cliftons and Richards, who more likely use the confusing nickname Dick or Dickie than yeah. Richard, because it makes him more approachable or something.
So weird. I never understood that one.
And also, let's understand this, too. There's two kinds of WASPs. There's the Yankee Northern WASPs, and then there's the Southern WASPs. And she picks either, because she feels seen amongst the seersucker, cottage on a plantation or Cape Cod, bourbon swilling, sending your kid to prep school, horse breeding, clay pigeon shooting, wooden-hulled boat, and Sperry topsider caucasity of it all.
Oh, my
God. She
gosh.
Would never leave that privilege behind.
Oh,
absolutely not. She doesn't
not.
Know how.
Right.
She doesn't
has
know
no
how
idea.
To step down.
No.
Oh, my God, no.
No.
Karen's probably never been poor. So that's also where I think a lot of that bourgeois attitude derives from.
Yeah, I think most likely Karens from a young age have always been, you know, at your service type of behavior.
Yeah.
You know, definitely her apparent rudeness towards working class staff is quite obvious that she never had to be working class.
Yes, absolutely. Karen is she's upper class and she's the kind of white woman that gets angry with the world, specifically the world that that lives in the middle class, for quote, ganging up on women like her. And what's wrong with being rich? And, you know, we give to charities and we have good hearts, and stop hating on us, you middle and low class people. It's no big deal that 10% of us have all the riches in the world and you guys are all struggling. Like, it's just luck and maybe a silver spoon in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, like I said before, is in her 40s, but she gets enough non-invasive plastic surgery that she is convinced that she doesn't look a day over 36, which is really, really convenient for her, because Karens tend to be very anti-science. They tend to mess around with
pseudoscience.
But in terms of like non-invasive plastic surgery or sort of beauty procedures, she does believe in that medical science, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, because it makes her look good.
Yeah. Quote, a stereotypical Karen plays fast and loose with pseudoscience, appropriates identities, may be conservative, and is extremely picky, end quote. That's from an article from Vox. Karen also loves to tone police. Ooh. We've never actually talked about tone policing on this show, but we know what tone policing is, even if we have never actually defined it. But let me go ahead and do it for you. If you've ever been a person of color and you've gotten really worked up over maybe a social justice issue or some sort of injustice in the workplace, Karen is the woman that comes along and says, well, if you just calm down, we can talk like adults about this. Or let's just all keep cool heads and we can have a real conversation. Karen is the woman that attacks the validity of a statement by criticizing the tone or the emotion with which the statement is made with.
Mm-hmm.
So she tries to undercut, or tone policing really works to undercut a valid argument, because it claims that all of this emotion, all of the passion that's behind it is really unnecessary. Right. And they put themselves in a really superior place, because those that tone police feel like the way that they are talking, comporting themselves, not getting worked up, that's the quote unquote right way.
Right, which completely invalidates that person and their feelings, and they aren't seen.
Mm-hmm.
Or heard, and that is highly disrespectful. So
yeah, definitely. As you said, she's generally divorced. She generally has kids. She is probably a flat earther, and she probably is involved in some sort of MLM.
And just, she does, just saying. Yeah, and she does good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Avon bought her a pink Mercedes
car.
Yeah, yeah.
She might be slanging you them cheap LuLaRoe leggings. She also uses Facebook a lot, hence the whole time thing, to post those really shitty motivational quotes, live, laugh, love, that sort of a thing. And Karens, I think it's also important to know that the definition of the name Karen, it means pure.
It's
and it's
so
of Scandinavian
ironic.
Origin. It is really, really ironic, because generally Karens are fair skinned, blue eyed, blonde hair. They really have that Aryan look.
And they kind of act like they are, let alone their rude entitlement, snobbish, but there is something about them that is like kind of prudish.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
They're not like overly sexual, or, you know, right. they don't flaunt their sexiness or show off their bodies in that way, but there is something about them that is prudish, and having that meaning be the meaning of their name is somewhat really like hypocritical.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of what they stand for. They mm-hmm. live in that hypocrisy, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone knows about those, the sort of like white supremacist manifestos online where they fight for their pure women, they're talking about Karens.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about the sort of very Aryan looking woman that needs to remain pure and unsullied. Amy Cooper is a Karen. not a Becky. I know we talked about Amy Cooper, top of show. Amy Cooper was the woman in Central Park who called the cops on a black man for bird watching. And this black man, his name is Christian. His last name is escaping me. Christian Humes, not the producer of this show.
I almost said, they have this, ironically, they also have the same last name.
It is actually ironic.
To me, I was like, you know what? Like, because of what happened with Amy Cooper, when she called the police, she made it very clear that this man is affecting my life so much. I am in danger right now because of him. And when I saw that they had the same last name, you know, I instantly thought, like, you guys could have been like brothers and sisters. Like, you could have been from the same wherever. And I just, it was just kind of sad to think like how divided that image was for me, because to see her raise her voice in that kind of way and demand that Christian Cooper was threatening her was so Karen like, you know?
Yeah. And see, I think for a lot of black people, when we saw that, we were like, oh, we're not surprised. Karen has been running rampant for a while. It's funny because Christian Cooper and the guys from Oakland who essentially recorded Barbecue Becky and made her into a viral meme both had a very similar idea, which is, I have to capture this sort of caucasity on display. Like, people need to see Karen's and Becky's in action. And what was wild was that Karen, aka Amy Cooper in this case, knew exactly what she was doing.
Right.
It was such a conscious weaponizing of her whiteness and of her white skin.
Right.
And
that rude entitlement. Just
absolutely. And I think that I still am just like flabbergasted by it.
It's so dehumanizing.
Yeah. And
you know,
I know she lost her job. I think she also lost her dog, which I don't necessarily know if I think that was completely necessary, right? Especially if I hope that dog is not going to be put down in any way, because I know it was returned to a shelter. But Amy Cooper and women like her need to be put on display more often. That kind of behavior is disgusting.
Completely unacceptable.
Well, because at the core, the thing that Karens and Beckys share is that they don't know how to be full, whole, happy human beings without putting their knee on the neck of someone or foot on the back of someone that they view as lesser than them.
Absolutely.
They don't know humanity if they're not inflicting pain on someone else.
Right. I think you said it perfectly, where the complete lack of compassion and the complete lack of being able to see someone else as whole is because they themselves aren't whole. They themselves don't see themselves as whole and complete. And if they do, it is distorted by wealth and privilege and them living their life in a way where they have gotten their way because of the color of their skin.
Yeah.
And bringing this up, I had to bring it up, when Key and Peele did their substitute teacher sketch.
Yes. Oh, yes.
You know, where white people have stigmatized and mocked ethnic names for the longest time possible. Mm-hmm. I just have to read this quote really quick.
Please.
White women have been calling black women Shanene and Laquisha and Shaniqua in a demeaning manner since the 80s.
Yep.
Latinas were called Consuela and Guadalupe or Maria, and Asian women were called Ling Ling, but they can't handle being called Karen for 11 months. I mean, people have gone out so far about saying that it's like the N-word for white women. And, you know, and the whole Dane Cook joke about how everyone has that one friend that they hate named Karen. Mean Girls, the dumb blonde one, her name was Karen. Goodfellas, you know, the meddling Karen. There's just so many, I believe it started as like an underground culture, but now has just been completely culturally established because of social media, because of memes, because of what they did to themselves. Karens wouldn't exist if Karens didn't exist.
Right. Exactly. You know? That's a really great way of putting it.
And so, I mean, we may be segueing into a different part, but we can totally go back as well.
Sure.
I think it just goes to show that the reason why it has blown up even more because of Amy Cooper, just like you said, it has to be shown, it has to be talked about, it has to be addressed. Because what happens is these Karens and these Beckys and these Susans, mm-hmm. who aren't called, who really aren't those names, they exist and they need to be able to look at themselves and face mm-hmm. themselves right now and change, because that kind of behavior, like, again, yeah. is unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you said it really, really well. I also think it's important to note that to say that Karen and Becky is the equivalent of the N-word is just so Becky and Karen.
I know.
And honey, that's not the way that works. Just that doesn't work like that. I'm sorry. No, if I can go outside and scream Karen, and I will surely get a white woman look up in my direction. If right. you go outside and scream the N-word, you might get your ass beat.
Right.
No one's kicking my ass if I call someone Karen. And trust right. me, I've called people Karen, Becky, Bex, like, you know, the whole gamut.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't work like that. But that is a good segue, because I do think that there is some historical precedent for this. This is taken from an article on Vox, and it's a really great sort of summing up of how we got here. So, quote, "There's plenty of historical precedent for using a proper name to stand in for a whole archetype or character or stereotype of a character. This linguistic use is usually referred to an eponym. Calling someone a Scrooge is perhaps the most recognizable example of an eponym, which references a wealth-hoarding, greedy personality." Kind of sounds like our president. Particularly in the United States, racial depictions of fictional characters have often become stand-ins for the negative stereotypes they represent. The Uncle Tom, the Mamie, the Step and Fetch, and so on. Cleve Evans, who is a professor at Bellevue University in Nebraska, who studies onomastastics, I think is how you pronounce it, wow. which is the history and etymology of proper names, has this to say. Quote, "There are a myriad of examples of words derived from names. Names like Patty and Mick function as anti-Irish slurs in the 19th century, while Guido was a common slur for Italians." Evan says that the takeaway wasn't that Karen is an insult now, but rather that names have always been fodder for this kind of use. Quote, "They are just another linguistic item that's possible to be associated with a particular group because of the perception that it's common among that group," he says. Quote, "The use of a personal name to refer to an entire grouping of people is a long-documented cross-cultural linguistic phenomenon that can be attested over many, many centuries. The specific names used, the connotations intended, and the people involved vary greatly." And that actually was a quote from Dr. I Am Nick, who is a nomenclature scholar and former president of the American Name Society.
Yeah, I think that what he said was really wonderful. I want to add, mm-hmm. he also said this point, on that Fox article, he talks about the Key and Peele sketch. Mm. And he was interesting. I had to kind of think about this one for a second. But before he talks about the Key and Peele sketch, he says, "From a scientific point of view," which Karens and Beckys don't believe in science.
No, of course not.
"There is nothing intrinsic yeah. about a personal name that makes it black or white. What I think is brilliant about the Key and Peele sketch is that it underscores the fact that personal names are often used to help create and reinforce discriminatory and injurious power differentials within societies."
Right.
And so I think what is so – I mean, I had to think about it for a minute, and it is true. Just because your name – you could have – I mean, you could have a black girl named Ling, you know?
And, that's true, yeah.
And you hear her name and you see her face and you're like, there's absolutely – the only reason why is because Ling could possibly be a last name that you associate it with, but there's nothing intrinsically about that that is going to tell you that she is Asian. And
right.
so I think what Key and Peele did so greatly was that they reversed it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to, you know, show that like, if you flip it around, you know, what is that like for them, you know, to have that intensity, to have, I mean, they butchered so many American English names. My name was in there. So much so that when I was serving at restaurants and I would introduce myself, I would have like all kinds of people, mostly Black people, be like, Jay Quellen. What? Your name is Jay Quillen from the sketch. And I never once took it like, how dare you? Like, never, you know?
Yeah.
Because what, why? Like, if I am not like a white girl and I'm not, you know, attributing myself to that, then I have no point in taking it personally.
Yeah.
So I think the names, you know, have always played a role in that existing, you know, societal rules, including power. Yeah. So I think this whole bit of Karen and Becky is just kind of social media really pushing that even further, and showing us that, like, wow, like, look at the differences and let's make fun of it for so sure. We can change.
For sure. The statement about a name not intrinsically being Black or white, I agree with that statement a lot. It also, though, gave me pause reading that, because I know quite a few African-American families who have a very strong tie to their culture, not just like an American culture, but maybe have some sort of African ties. And when a new child was in the womb and names were being discussed, the conversation of, do we give our child a traditional heritage name, or do we give them a name that the world can understand and that might be easier for them to move through the world with, is a very, very common conversation.
Yeah.
And it's a conversation that is incredibly painful, mainly because the decision that these parents are making is, what is the power, because all names have power, that I am going to bestow upon my kid by giving them the name that I give them. And I used to, before all this started, I used to watch a lot of those like lockup shows, sort of inside prison. And one thing that I would notice is that a lot of the African-American men that were in there generally had names that society either had a hard time pronouncing, couldn't wrap their minds around, or were just so not normal that it felt like people didn't know how to respond or react to these names.
Right.
And I think if we think about what the, like, what's in the power of a name, it is important to remember that a lot of times your name is the thing that people see before they meet you.
Absolutely.
And so people are going to draw inferences about what your name is, who it belongs to, and sure, then who you may or may not be. So there is a part of me that didn't necessarily agree with that statement, because I've never met a white Jaquan. Right. I've met a handful of Black ones, but I've never met a white one.
Right. And I'm sure you've met, if you flip it, like, I'm sure you've met a Black guy with a white name, but you've never, absolutely, it's hard to meet, yes, a white guy with a Black name.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like, you've met a Black guy named Adam. Mm-hmm. You've also met, yeah, a white guy's name Adams, but you've never, yeah, met a white guy named Shaquille or something. No. You know?
So, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I had to kind of take pause on that one and kind of reflect, because I kind of put it into two categories where it's like, based on science, yes. And I guess the way I would think about it is, like what you said, my argument is that when it comes to something culturally, it does feel intrinsic, where, mm-hmm, you are taking your family name. Your family name may be like Johnson & Johnson. You've like 7th, 8th generational company that carries that family name, that has defined, yeah, your success. But at the same time, it's like, you can talk about the fact that if you take names, you know, what do you have to show? Your character, you know, your willingness, your effort, your communication, your standard of your character does, mm-hmm, go beyond your name. And I think that's what's the so like paradoxical, mm-hmm, fact about what we're speaking upon here, because it's like, if your name is Karen, then in a way prove to us that you're not a Karen.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, yeah, kind of the play on how in a way, if you look at it in a different perspective, yes, it can be intrinsic. But mm-hmm. if you want to destigmatize or pull yourself away from that and now let that to actually open yourself up and become aware of maybe what your name might mean, mm-hmm. then let it not be intrinsic and fight for your name to not make it mean what you think it means. You know, like it's a little bit yeah. like...
Anyways, no, yeah, definitely. I have to kind of yeah, go for there. Sure. Yeah, I've been resisting the urge to say not all white women are named Beckys, but all Beckys are white women, because there's a part of me that knows that it's technically untrue.
Right.
But that sort of Becky-ish behavior can really only come from a white woman, or a Sharon-ish behavior, yeah, or Susan behavior.
I think all the people. And this is kind of the segment we're going to go into next with you guys is that, oh, I'm like totally swaying and not in front of my mic. Sorry, guys. I realize that all those, it's difficult now for all those people of color named Karen and named Becky kind of get pulled into this. And let's say they're just, you know, you don't know who they are, but you see their name, like you said, yep. you will assume that they are white.
Yeah.
And so I think about myself in that situation, and let's say my name was like Becca, you know, and all of a sudden I am just writing this person an email. They haven't seen my handle, my Instagram. They haven't seen anything. They don't know anything about me. That might color the way they respond to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Like... In that Root article, The Five Different Types of Becky, it's funny that you bring up the name Becca, because in that, the writer breaks down the five different kinds of Beckys. And so I think funny. Becca was the one, Becca was like your I'm an one? Ally. No, that was Rebecca. Rebecca's like your Megyn Kelly and your Taylor Swift,
right.
Who's just all contradictions. You know, love puppies, fuck Trayvon Martin, that kind of a thing. I think Becca is sort of like the more well-intentioned one when it's convenient, versus like a Beckisha, as he said, who's like your Miley Cyrus, who, because she doesn't have a, quote, racist bone in her body, puts on the black, you know, misappropriates black culture, and then like drops it like a, like last year's like old winter coat when she's sort of done with it. And then Beckzilla
moves on to the next
yeah,
one.
Exactly. Yeah. And I also just wanted to quickly say Sharon, because we've, or sorry, Susan, because we've mentioned Susan. Susan is essentially like the next step up from Karen.
I think of Susan, her like a Jane Fonda. Like a Jane Fonda in that movie.
Oh, but Jane Fonda is so progressive.
Oh, no. In the character, what's that with Jennifer Lopez, where she's like her monster-in-law?
Oh, I never saw that.
Oh, okay. So I think of this like uptight, you know, can't accept that she is becoming old, filthy rich type of character. If any of you guys have seen it, Jane Fonda is fantastic. And I love Jane Fonda. You're right. She is so progressive, but she plays this character so well. But yeah, I think
check this movie out.
It's hilarious. You'd love it. You're going to cry. You're going to laugh. Jennifer Lopez is great in it. Jane Fonda is amazing in it. You know, like sneaks off, maybe like borderline alcoholic. I don't know. But just like this type of, yeah, go on. That was the image that came to my head, because she has that same kind of haircut and she is much older. So.
See, when I think of a Susan, I think of a Kellyanne Conway. That older woman, she's sort of given up. She's all the things that Karen is, but she's sort of given up the jig of like plastic surgery. Girl, you looking over 50 and you can't fight it. You're not black, so you crack. You're not Asian, so you're raisin. But also, she is so stuck in her ways that she is a lost cause.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
to
yeah.
me, the Susans are like the 50s and up, and it's like, girl, you're stuck. It's not even worth trying to change your outlook, because there's just no point. Like you're the type that's like, well, prove it to me, do all the emotional labor for me, and I will sit here and say yes I agree and no I don't. And you know what, we ain't got time for that as millennial forward thinking women. Like, this is the truth, take it or leave it. And Susans are never going to be willing to take it.
Yeah, definitely.
So where do we go from here?
Well, first off, what do you do if your name is Karen or Becky? How do you navigate life if you don't feel like a Karen, if you don't feel like a Becky? There's been so many hilarious articles about actual Karens writing about the name Karen. Mm-hmm. And they all end pretty light for the most part. I mean, there has been many Karens that have stepped forward because of that Dane Cook joke. You know, we all kind of, people have said, you know, we can all remember a time in our life when we were in grade school where name calling was actually really hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, I think, as a young child, kind of one of the first ways where you see someone being really mean to one another, where you learn to be mean by either watching someone call someone else a hurtful name, or you yourself experiencing that feeling, you know, overcome you of feeling hurt because someone called you a name. And then what do you learn when you're in fourth grade? You learn to name call back. And so I think there have been some Karens that have stepped forward and said, you know, growing up, it was really difficult for me because the Dane Cook joke would come up and I was really young and, you know, growing up with that and not knowing that, like, obviously in your fifth grade, you're obviously not being a Karen. Or maybe you are. I don't know.
Well, you're not aware of it. You're not aware of being your Becky at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so there is this, like, innocence to it that I do see for maybe someone who is younger. Kind of does, as someone who thinks a lot about that mental health aspect, kind of does make me want to not take part in this as much, which I haven't really. It's just like, it's so in our faces that you can't help it, you know?
Right.
But I, like, if my little sister's name was Karen, I think that would be a whole different ballgame for me. Of course, I can joke about it with my brother and Denise and other stuff like that. But when it's in your face, when your name is Karen, when your mother's name is Karen and she may be old and sick, like, I don't know. It's just kind of interesting to think about those perspectives for me. It can leave some deep psychological scars. What I can say for any Karens or Beckys right now that are somewhat healthy mentally and are dealing with this phrase, meme, slur, whatever you want to call it, is that just don't let it define you. Like, about, like, amongst all the other themes we talk about here, just don't, really what I'm gonna say is just don't be a Karen or a Becky if your name is Karen and Becky. It is that simple. That is it. And if you feel like you are, that is maybe because you're guilty by association. That is maybe because you actually have moments where you are, like, I read this really funny article about this mom who was at a restaurant, and she turned to her husband, her name is Karen, and she said, honey, can you go speak to the manager? I want to speak to the manager, or something like that. And she had this moment. If it wasn't for all these memes and social media, she had this moment where she was like, oh my God, I'm being a Karen right now. And I think it was so wonderful for her to just kind of, like, step down and tone down and calm down. And so if anything, it's going to help put these women in check, you know?
There was a part of me that in thinking about what it's like to be a Karen or a Becky right now, I wonder if Karens and Beckys are having a kind of a minority experience. As you know, as minorities, there's that phrase, we have to work twice as hard to get half as much. And I wonder if Karens and Beckys are having a similar experience where you were born white, your parents named you Karen or Becky. You got to work twice as hard to prove that you are not a Karen and Becky, because you are just automatically going to have people that see you, hear your name, and go, oh, here she comes. Here comes Karen. Here comes Becky. Let me get my phone out because she might start pulling some Amy Cooper shit. Who knows?
Right.
So I do. There's a part of me that is, as much as white people will never experience what it's like to be a minority, I think it's important that if there are some experiences that can mirror a minority experience to really help people to see change, it's important.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, I think that's really what's happening now, specifically with white women named Karen and Becky and any sort of
or any sister. Any woman who is white and middle age and
never really thought about her privilege, but thought this is just okay. It's the way that it is. It's no big deal to call a manager.
Right. Or never felt like
call the cops.
Like, you will live your life right now. You will go somewhere and you will automatically, not you, but other mm-hmm. people will treat you differently because of the color of your skin.
Right.
People will treat me differently because the shape of my eyes, you know, they'll mm-hmm. assume things about me, that maybe I'm not from here, that maybe I have a virus, that maybe I don't speak English, mm-hmm. all these things without saying a word.
Yeah.
And so for women of that age, of this era, who are now having to have all that being assumed based on their name, I think yep. I think you painted a wonderful picture of how similar that is and how similar that experience can be, and if it can bring us together to be more kind and compassionate, understanding of one another, then that's where I hope it goes. Because
I also think, to my people of color listening, who are on the receiving end of a Karen or a Becky, behavior, I think it's important to decide how much changing this Karen or Becky opinion means to you. There's a lot of emotional labor that goes into trying to change the racist thoughts of racist people.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's not worth your energy. Yeah. Sometimes it's just not worth it. Sometimes Karens will just be Karens. Beckys will just be Beckys.
Until the day they die.
Yeah. And no matter how many good points you bring up to them, they're still going to Karen and Becky their way through life. So to yeah. any of my marginalized people listening, which are lots, you don't have to always engage Karens or Beckys. Take a page out of Christian Cooper's book. Oh, a Karen or Becky is in front of you? Just hold up that phone, because one thing that Karens and Beckys can't help but do is Karen and Beckying and just general white personing their way through life. They can't help it. They've right. never if, had someone call them on it before.
Right. And if anything, that camera will either make themselves step up their Karen and Becky game, which mm-hmm. even more the reason why to pull out your phone, or maybe right. they'll start getting a hint or two that as soon as that phone whips out, they'll shut their mouth, which hopefully it doesn't have to even get to there, which is ridiculous. Right. But, you know.
Or you might rack up thousands of likes and you might become a verified Instagram or Twitter user. And if that's what happens, you let us know. Yeah. If you catch a Karen or Becky in action and that shit blows up and goes viral, we want to know about it, because we are messy and we love that kind of stuff over here. That's yeah. all I got over here.
Yeah, same here. It's just, this was kind of more of a lighter episode, but also, you know, not as light as maybe we all thought, because there's a lot of, right. You know, underground factors that are coming up with all of this. Mm-hmm. So I hope you guys liked it. If you guys are Karen, are Becky, not white, let us know how you felt about this episode, your takeaways from it. We'd love to hear from you. You can DM us at podcastblackandyellow@gmail.com. We're also on the gram at the Black and Yellow Podcast. I am Jacqueline Chung Young on Instagram.
I am Alana Webster. You can find me at Renegade of Fun on the gram. Please feel free to follow us on all forms of social media. Go ahead and subscribe to the show. And if you know someone who would like this show or thinks the content is funny or just wants to feel seen, please pass it along. That's how this show keeps going.
Definitely.
Leaving a rate and review is also really, really helpful to keep pushing this little show that could and still is along. And one last thing, we've got some really exciting shows coming up in the month of August. Woo-hoo. We are prepping them now. We've got some great things coming your way. So check us out. Stay up on the podcast. If you haven't subscribed, subscribe, because August is going to be very wordy, is what I'll say. It's going to be a sort of a well-read August, if you will, but I won't say any more than that.
Yes, tune in, y'all. We hope you're having a wonderful week. We hope you're staying safe, healthy, learning whatever you have to be learning during quarantine or not, to yeah. each its own. And we'll catch you guys next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Stay safe.